Welcome to Launch, where we explore the world of invention and entrepreneurship. I'm Jim DeBetta with my co-host Ron Reardon and our producer Lee Cantor. Good morning, guys.
Hey, Jim. How you doing?
Mr. Jim, how's your day? Bright and early for you. Are you a morning guy?
I am a morning guy. I think by lunchtime I kind of
pass out.
That's it. I'm done.
Under the desk?
That's it. Finished for me.
I'm the opposite of that. I get most of my energy late at night.
Really?
Yep.
We'll see that. It's a 24-hour-a-day endeavor with us.
That's it. That's what we're launching, 24 hours a day.
All right, guys. Look, Ron, you and I talk about this endlessly, and in our world, this just comes up all the time. Despite all the information that exists out there in the world of inventing a product and taking it to market, people still don't really get the process right and think it's a big issue.
That's true. And while there are certain things that are common to any invention that you come up with or any industry, there the words in our area is it depends.
That's true. All right. Well, we're going to test our producer Lee's knowledge of the invention process just to see how much people really know.
Okay, go ahead. What do you?
Well, what's the first thing, Lee? You get an idea.
The first thing I do is I ask my mom what she thinks of the idea.
That is ding, 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 perfectly correct. Well, you know, actually, I think that's a real tendency, Ron.
What do you ask that? Like your people around you? Go, hey, I came up with this. What do you think?
No, there's a danger in that because, you know, your mom and friends and family want to be nice to you, and if they think the idea stinks, they're going to say, oh, yeah, that's great.
Okay, well, maybe your first step is people who like you, and then your second step is, like, people who don't like you that much.
Well, I guess, like Ron said, look, if I said to my mom, and hopefully she loves me kind of a thing, if she's willing to put up the money, hey, you could like me all you want. I'm only kidding. But I think the thing to do is you need objective opinions, and your family and friends, like Ron said, are going to tell you that your idea is good unless they're really out to hurt your feelings. So they're not really the best source of people to talk to.
So I have my idea, so my first move isn't my friend. So where do I go?
I think the first thing you have to do is you have to go to people you don't know, total strangers, and you have to get their opinions.
So where do I find these people? At the mall? Am I just going up to strangers in the mall?
Well, people do all kinds of things. Today, you know, with the internet, the best thing to do is really to launch a consumer survey. They're not always the most accurate things because, you know, when people take surveys, you know, they don't always necessarily care what answers they put, but that's really the best way to start out.
Well, and I think I disagree on that because when I talk with potential clients, one of the first things that I do is I give them a sheet of 41 questions that are rated 1 to 10 where they can self-assess their invention because I think that even though it's their baby and it's going to be a subjective test, if they look at, you know, question number one that says, does it have a wow factor? Is it like the DVD player was to the VCR? And if your invention is only 10% better than what's out there, forget it.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so they go through the 41 questions, and 50% of the people that I hand that to never call me back because even though it was their baby, they thought it was the best thing since sliced bread. Once they look at the reality of taking something to market, you know, they look at, you know, the packaging and the demand and things like that, then they just say, oops, you know, no, this thing wasn't as good as I thought it was.
Or maybe it's that they just don't have the passion equal to the amount of money that it's going to cost them to take a shot.
Yeah, that's true. Or they might get scared by the complexity of the process. And then, you know, I also recommend people just, you know, get on the internet and, you know, use a search engine to find out if it's already been done. Because normally, if you come up with this idea, somebody else has probably come up with it also.
It's right.
Pretty rare that you somebody invents Kevlar or Teflon.
Right. Now, how about we just take an example of a real product that's out there that, you know, I don't think is patented or I don't think it's been marketed yet. Is that the guy with the pizza box that's
right
on YouTube?
Yeah, we just looked at that. And that's an interesting thing because, again, sometimes people come up with great ideas. And like Ron said, you do have to find out if that idea exists. The danger is infringing on somebody else's patent.
Right. But just let's look at it from a standpoint of you have a pizza box. Obviously, that's already been patented or that's already taken care of, right? There's pizza boxes already out there.
It's been done.
So what this guy did is he took it and he put a little twist to it. And he said, okay, you have a pizza box, and then you can make four plates out of the bottom, and you can use the top to make a storage container for the leftovers. So he's got a little spin to an existing product. Is that something that can even be patented? Because the box already exists.
It's definitely patentable material. As we were talking before the show started, somebody, there's a past inventor here in Atlanta that the little container that you have at Chick-fil-A to put in the French fries, you know, he was the inventor of that. He worked at a paper company that made boxes and stuff like that. And because of the shape and the perforations and the way it folds and the way it stacks, you know, he got a patent on that.
So he was able to take, so there were already French fry holders.
Sure.
And so he just kind of put his little twist to it.
He made a better French fry holder.
Right.
Most patents are for improvements on existing concepts.
So now would you see, you saw, each of you have seen the pizza thing, and I'm sure Jay will put up the link to that pizza YouTube box guy on the website. But is that something that he should move forward? Does that have the wow factor? Do you think that'll pass the 41 tests?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on who's going to be buying it. You know, if it's one of the major pizza companies, you know, they have to be sold on the fact that this is going to give added value to their customers.
Mm-hmm.
Enough added value that it can, you know, drive customers to them instead of to their competitors. And one of the places that he should start is with the companies that actually make the paper products, because a lot of large companies, they're not that innovative because they're large. Okay?
Right.
But if you look at their suppliers, like the people that actually make the paper products, that would be the place that I'd recommend that he go to actually, you know, see if he could license that particular technology.
Well, let's get this down to a real basic level, too. If you think about it, I've got three kids. When we eat pizza, it's a whole ordeal to open up the box. We got to get all the paper plates out, and you never have them. You always run out. Then it's glass dishes. So having that box, to me, is wonderful. But the question is, what would the pizza place charge for the box? So if a pie is $15, are they going to charge $17, or am I not going to notice it and it's just some added value in with the product?
Right. And because it could be that as far as the additional expense to a pizza company, that there's not going to be any, because I wouldn't think there'd be that much additional cost when they're making the box, you know, to put all those perforations in there. But I'm not a...
Well, now you got to pay the guy who invented it, right? He's got to get his piece of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, those are licensing deals in essence, and that's a whole other conversation. But a lot of people come up with ideas, obtain patents for them, and then don't want to develop the product themselves. They want other companies to take it and
right.
run with it, so to speak.
Yeah. And I would think that there's pizza places absolutely everywhere. It looks like it's a pretty darn competitive environment, and I'm sure they're going to be very cost conscious. So if there's any additional cost to them, you know, even if it's just 10 cents a box or something like that, then they
may not be interested.
Yeah, they might not be interested. Okay, it all depends on their perception of the value proposition, that the extra 10 cents. It's going to mean more pizzas sold.
Right, because people don't typically buy pizza based on the box. You know, you're going for the pizza.
For the taste, that's for sure. You know, Ron, I want to go back to something you said, because I think this is where people get really stuck on, you know, being objective and getting opinions from family or friends or from strangers. It's interesting, because when people contact me, I have a questionnaire, too, so I can find out what people think about their own product, what their goals are. But I've yet to talk to anybody that has ever said, after sending them a questionnaire, that, nah, I don't think my idea is good, or it doesn't have a wow effect. It seems like everybody thinks that their idea is perfect, and it may be in theory good, but doesn't mean it's going to translate into sales at the shelves at retail.
True, because you know there is a difference between does it work and will it sell. Just thinking about the pizza example that we've got, because you know the box comes into four plates. I think he'd need to do a market segmentation to find out how many single people order pizzas versus two people order pizzas versus four people order
right.
pizzas, because his invention is really geared towards there's going to be four people eating
right.
this pizza. And it could be that percentage-wise, that's a pretty small part of the pizza market. I know in my case, whenever my wife goes to Mexico, I hope she's not listening to the show, that I order, you know, pizza, you know, and either it's delivered or I go pick it up, and, you know, I eat the pizza while she's not there.
Right. It's in that single serving container.
Right.
The pizza box is a single serving container.
That's right.
Yeah, but I have five in my family, so what do I do? Where's that last piece go? So.
That goes to you, Dad.
you have to hold it. You have to hold it without the little plate.
Everyone, my kids would be fighting over the plates. That's for sure. That's probably the fun part. And then they're like, let's go back to that pizza place. And I think that's kind of how those little things become self-marketing machines.
Right.
Yeah. So we talked earlier that in the pizza space, there's this little plastic piece that's round at the top and got three little legs that keeps the top of the box from hitting the cheese and the pepperoni.
Yeah, that's right.
That's a patented item.
Okay? Really?
Yeah. And if you sit there and look at the underneath it, there's the patent number.
Okay, that's a sweetheart patent.
Do you like that one?
That's an awesome one. I wonder, whoever you are out there, we'd love to hear from you. I'd love to know how that whole thing is working out for you. I think that's an awesome idea, actually.
But, Jim, are your clients typically this kind of a client where the place he'll sell this eventually will be to the paper company? It won't be to Walmart. It won't be to like an individual. So is the process different when it goes like kind of in a business setting as opposed to directly to the consumer?
Well, I always tell people that at the end of the day, when you have an idea in your head, the process is mostly the same. There are exceptions, but you still have to go through this number one step, which we discussed, which was you have to validate the idea with people that you don't know. And if you can't get past that, or most people say, I don't like it, or there's something specific that could be changed, then you have to make those changes because, again, those are the people that might be the buyers of the product.
But is there really a way to test if someone's actually going to spend money on this? Because I'm sure if you showed this pizza box, for example, to a bunch of people, everybody would go, oh, that's a great idea. I'd use that. But then if it came down to, well, would you pay another 50 cents a pizza for that?
Well, those are part of some of the questions that you have to ask. And the magic in doing surveys, whether they're focus groups, live and in person, or consumer surveys via online, is asking the right questions. It's not, what do you think? Do you think it's great or not? Some people feel bad and may still say, oh, it's pretty good. But when you ask specific questions, that's what's going to allow people for you to get the answers that you really need to formulate the best product.
Yeah, I agree.
What about like in terms of even saying, yeah, I'd buy that. And then you go, well, if we made this, it would cost $50. And go, well, I paid $10 for it. I'm not going to pay $50 for it. Like, how do you sort all that stuff out?
Well, there are definitely questions when I do questionnaires for surveys that kind of put things for pricing in brackets. So we would say, would you pay $10 for this item, or would you be likely to pay $10? Would you likely pay $15? Would you likely pay $20? And you start seeing a drop off of people that say yes as you get higher in price. So what you find that middle ground where the most respondents say they would pay X dollars, and that's kind of where you should settle on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and there's an inventor in town that has spoken at the Inventors Club and at other venues that wishes he had done that. He was a hairdresser, and he invented this very complex machine with an incredible pump that would pump the hair relaxer, you know, out to a little applicator so that it would be very convenient for putting on the client's hair.
Sure.
And it worked, and everybody loved it. It's just that he couldn't get them to pay, you know, the proper amount of money for him to make a profit, and he lost his shirt on that one.
So he went through the whole process of building out the whole machine and manufacturing it.
Right.
And then
because he was in the industry, he was the hairdresser that would, you know, open up the containers and take the goop out and put it on, and said there's got to be a better way, and did the research and found, you know, went to a pump manufacturer and says, I need a pump that will pump peanut butter, basically, because that's the consistency of this stuff. And got it, and it worked, and it was complex, and it was big, and it was sleek, and it looked nice, and he had several of them made, and, you know, put them in salons, you know, for freebies, and they would use it, says, we love it. And then it came down to, well, will you buy it? And the answer was no.
No. Great idea, though.
Right.
Well, that's a common problem where people will go ahead and spend a lot of money on creating prototypes and samples and even actually finding a factory and manufacturing the product, spending tens, if not sometimes hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they haven't done this consumer research. You have to find out first before you start spending the money, and that's where a lot of inventors lose their shirts.
Right. Plus, I tell folks, you know, the more complex the machine and the bigger the device, the lower the probability that you're going to be successful with it.
That's
true. If it's made out of an inexpensive material like plastic or cloth or things like that, and it's small, takes up very little space, and yet the perceived value is pretty high, then the probability starts going up.
Simple products seem to always sell best for some reason. Things without moving parts, without electricity, things that don't have to get government approval, like a UL approval or an FDA approval. Those things are relatively simple and easy to manufacture. Hence, they get on the shelves quicker, and people have a comfort with things that are easy to use that they don't have to figure out all the time.
Yeah, because the rest of the story with the inventor I mentioned with the complex machine that would pump peanut butter is that his second invention was made out of cloth. It was what is called the Gabriel feeding pad. And they've made a gazillion dollars off of that. Got on the Oprah show and, you know, done very, very well.
And so he didn't get discouraged after going through that whole process.
Well, he got very discouraged. But it's one of those things of they had three kids, and his wife was really exhausted, so she went upstairs and said, you know, you feed the baby. And so he's feeding the baby with the bottle, and yet the basketball game's about to come on. And so he's holding the baby with one arm, feeding with the other arm, and it's like, how do I continue to feed the baby, you know, and yet get to the television remote control?
Right.
And that's when he had the eureka moment of he had the burp pad on his shoulder, went and got some duct tape and a little bit of cloth and created a little holder for the bottle that would feed the baby while he could operate the thing. And from that came more prototypes and the eventual product that's now selling at Walmart and other places.
I was going to say, I'd call the person lazy, but if he's selling his product all over retail, then all of a sudden he's a genius. So.
That's difference. Right. It's that fine line between laziness and genius. Right?
You know, Ron, I want to go back to, I think we skipped one of the most important parts before you even start doing consumer surveys and focus groups is you got to make sure that there isn't a patent. So doing the patent search really is ground zero for any product because, as we all know, the most important thing is not so much that you necessarily need a patent because you don't need a patent to go to market, but
No. You
don't want to infringe on somebody else's idea because then you're running into a lot of trouble.
Yeah, and that's why I recommend folks go to a search engine like Google and number one, just go to the regular search engine and just say, is it already out there? Okay, and then if you don't see it actually in the marketplace, searching through the internet, then you can go to google.com/patents, put in some keywords like mouse and trap and, see if your new mouse trap, has already been done.
Right. So like this pizza box guy, he would look up pizza box or paper products or something like that. And then, but aren't there like a gazillion things under boxes?
Yeah, because, for mouse traps, there's over 4,000 mouse trap patents out there. And I'm sure in the paper product area that there's quite a few patents on all kind of boxes that fold and turn.
Right.
And
so how would he be able to discern, from all that technical patent stuff if his is already out there?
Well, I always tell folks if you can go to google.com/patents and enter in your keywords and find it, then, it's game over. But if you don't find it, that doesn't mean it's not there. That's when you have to have a professional prior art search done. To people that actually know the classifications and know how to maneuver through all the patents, for them to be able to say, it's been done or it's not been done.
You know what a common problem, though, is, Ron? People tend to skip some of those steps. Yeah, they'll do a quick search online, but what they do is they go to a store, like whatever retailer, and they look on the shelves, and if they don't see it, they assume that the product there's no patent, and that's
right. Dangerous. Yes, it is. It can work both ways. I had one person call me up and says, I've got an idea. She was female. She says, I got an idea for an electric car jack because, if you're female and you get a flat tire, you don't want to get your hands dirty, this would just plug into the cigarette lighter. You'd put it underneath the car, and it would raise it. And I told her, I've not searched that area, but my intuition tells me that's been done.
Right.
I said, go to google.com/patents, enter in, electric car jack, see what pops up. She calls me back 5 minutes later. You were right. It's been done. But the other side of that is what Jim was talking about. I had one couple came to me that had invented a way to give medicine to dogs. They took an existing doggy treat that looks like a pig in a blanket, little hot dog with dough around it. They turned it on in. They drilled a hole 3/4 of the way down the hot dog. They said, this is the invention. You make this treat this way. And because you put the pill in there, you squeeze it off. You're giving the dog treats without the pill, then you give the dog a treat with the pill,
right.
And he takes his heartworm medicine. They looked on the internet, didn't exist. They went to Petco, PetSmart, not out there.
Right.
They did their own patent search, wasn't there. Paid me to do the search. 1994, their exact invention had been patented. I saw that the inventor had sold his patent to a company. Looked up that company with some keywords, and there it was in a bag on the internet. Okay. So that's the value of having, a professional search done.
Now, but isn't there times where somebody might have a patent for something and maybe they're not using it anymore or the product didn't work out, but they still own the patent for a period of time, right, even though it's not in use?
Yeah, the term of a patent is going to be 20 years from the date of filing as long as they're making the maintenance fees. And since it's pretty common that a lot of inventors know how to invent, but they don't know how to market, okay, and a lot of times they won't engage a professional team to help them get it to market. They might be having a patent that's still in force, but they've never done anything with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find an existing patent, you can go to the owner of it and just says, you're not doing anything with it. How much would you take for your patent? And if it's a reasonable amount of money, then you can buy the patent. It's called a signing, but it's just like, you know, selling property.
Right.
And then it's yours, and you're off to go. You don't have to worry about the wait of how long it takes to go through the patent office. You got an issued patent, and off you go.
I think the danger, though, again, is that, and kind of summing all that up, is that, you know, you do have to really check thoroughly, especially if you're going to build a business around your product. Some people will ask me, Jim, look, I just want to make a few bucks. I want to sell my product for a couple of years. And I say, well, listen, it may not be worth getting a patent and going through the process and waiting and trying to build around that. But if you're going to be in business, you're going to have a product company, you want to sell your products for 10, 15, 20 years, then you got to protect that. And protecting your business, your intellectual property, and building a company around that that can't be just taken away from you by somebody that copies you.
Right. Yeah, so important. Yeah, the patent decision depends on several factors. It's like, you know, how long do you expect this to sell? If it's going to sell for a year or two, then forget about getting a patent, okay? Because, you know, your cycle will be over before you ever received a patent. If you're going to spend more money on the patenting, then you're going to actually receive, you know, from profit. Then you don't want to go there either.
How much does it cost to go through the patent process?
Yeah, you know, it's going to, depending on the complexity of the invention and where you go, you know, who you engage, it could be anywhere from $5,000 to $20,000 for your patenting.
And then that gets you a patent in your hand that protects whatever that product is.
Yeah, it gives you the right to prohibit other people from making it. You know, it doesn't give you the right to do it, but it gives you the right to prohibit other folks.
And it doesn't include manufacturing the first one or anything like that, right?
Now, I always tell people that, you know, if they can't afford the patenting cost, then they really shouldn't start the journey, because that's really going to be the least cost that you're going to have.
And that's another myth, too, you're talking about money. The big myth is that people read something in Fortune or Forbes, and they see somebody on the cover and, you know, swimming in money, and they think that that person made millions of dollars overnight, didn't spend a dime. But it cost money in almost every instance to take a product to market.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I recommend to people here in Atlanta, we have the inventor of Spanx, Sarah Bakely.
Right.
And I always send people to Spanx.com. There's a little icon there that says about Sarah, and it tells her story. And it was a 5-year journey. And while she did a lot of stuff herself, it still cost her money to get that going.
Yeah.
When she went to the manufacturers for it, I think it was something like 17 different manufacturers, they all turned her down. They weren't going to make what I call, in a simplified way, pantyhose without feet, okay? And finally, one of the manufacturers came back to her and said, I've changed my mind. I'll manufacture that for you. And then she got suspicious, and she said, well, what changed your mind? He says, well, I got two teenage daughters that think it's a good idea.
Sometimes it's just something simple that spurs somebody to, I mean, people are people. So if somebody personally has an issue or they have kids, that could be the difference between where she could have been and where she is now.
Yeah. When I went to Georgia State, the marketing professor told us over and over and over again, it was almost like a mantra. He says, remember, you are not the target market. Just because you wouldn't buy it doesn't mean it's not going to be a huge success. And even though I'm in the innovation business, I'm a late adopter. I wait for things to get down to a reasonable price and all the bugs get out of it. I've only downloaded one ringtone in my life, and that's the ringtone from Top Gun. But that doesn't mean that that's not a huge, huge profitable business. But I'm not the target market for that.
Right.
There's people a whole lot younger than me.
And that's where the consumer surveys come in. You have to reach out to people other than yourself, out of your comfort zone, to find out based on what that product is, who is a likely buyer. So if it's a baby product, asking parents or moms or dads with kids at that age really is the best group to ask, not, you know, somebody who maybe is 50, their kids are in college, they've kind of forgotten what those times are like.
Right, and what the pain is and what this might solve.
Yeah, because I've had inventors come to me and they'll ask me the question directly. He says, Ron, would you buy this? And I'd say, no. I wouldn't buy it. I said, but my wife would buy three.
Right.
Yeah, and that is common, where people will ask me the same questions. You know, what do I think about it? I said, well, it really doesn't necessarily matter what I think. The facts matter. What the surveys show, what other information, what the patent status is. Those are the things that are going to allow you to move forward or stop you dead in your tracks.
Now, I'm sure you each have stories where you might have seen a product and loved it, and then that you do a little bit of research and, like, no one's buying it, or the opposite, where you've, like, I don't get this at all, and then you do a little research, all of a sudden it's popular?
Well, I see a lot of things I do like, and just sometimes the ingredients aren't there to make it happen. I'm not sure if I've seen necessarily something out there or that doesn't exist that could have or would have. I mean, I'm not really sure, but
Yeah. I know the timing is important on certain things. Today we pretty much take sliced bread for granted. But there was a time when bread was not sliced.
Right. Okay?
And an inventor got a patent on a commercial bread slicer. And he got the patent on it, and none of the companies were interested in it. And the patent expired, the inventor died, and then I think it was Colonial that decided, you know, I think we'll start slicing bread. And they found the patent, the technology, used it, and, you know, the inventor never got a dime because he invented it too early, you know, before right. the market was ready.
Isn't there a Colonial Bread company that, or maybe that's just a brand that's just so generic where when I go to Publix or Kroger, I see this Colonial Bread and there's like a little kid on the package. I mean, is that the same?
Probably the same one, yeah.
You know, like a 200-year-old company.
So then it's been around a long time.
Every bread company has to pay them for slicing the bread?
No, because the patent expired, and it's in the public domain. Anybody could use it.
Oh, you know, that reminded me of a story. I remember I was playing golf. This was a couple of years ago, and I ran into a guy who knew a guy who knew a guy who invented that package that's inside of a cereal box, that plasticky material.
Oh, wow.
And that person, that family, continues to receive royalties today. And I'm thinking, what?
From every cereal company?
From every cereal company, because they all use that
little
same,
waxy,
yeah, that papery kind of, that, you know, when you try to open it or your kids open it, they wreck the whole box
exactly.
kind of thing.
Yeah. No one could make a better one of those?
Yeah, and I think it depends on the license agreement, because the interesting story that I heard that is about Listerine, that there was a licensing agreement put together for Listerine of that they would pay so much per case, you know, for using Listerine. And at the time, it was a trade secret. Well, about 30 years after that license agreement was done, because there was no end date on it, and there was nothing in there about the fact that what if it's not a trade secret, you know? Well, it was published in a medical journal what the formula was for Listerine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they continued paying it, and it changed hands who actually owned, you know, that property. And finally, they went to court and says, you know, we're tired of paying this. We want to quit. And the judge looked at the original license agreement and says, I'm sorry. It basically says that you'll always pay this and you've got to keep paying it. Yeah, I mean, it didn't, you know, it wasn't a trade secret, didn't have a patent, it was in the common knowledge, but it's a contract, you know, with no end date. And, you know, it didn't say, you know, it was very simple. And so they continue to pay it today.
Wow.
You never know what's going to happen, what ideas are going to make money. And that's part of the exciting part about this business, is that you never know, and you don't know how consumers are going to react to something. So,
yeah. And there's a book out that came out last year by Steve Greenberg called Gadget Nation. And in there's 100 stories of inventors and those that were successful and those that didn't. And to answer your question you asked a little bit earlier, two of the things in there that really surprised me about that succeeded was one of them was bird diapers. Now, I don't have any parakeets or birds.
Bird diapers.
Bird diapers is enormously successful, and that blew me away.
Okay, how do you even
who
get a bird
on?
In the position
right, to
get
put
a
the diaper on?
I can't get a diaper on our kids. I'm
a human.
A bird.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it surprised me. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me.
So now they can fly around your house.
This guy's made money with bird diapers. And the other one was a device that's made out of plastic with very sharp razors on it that is for bald people to shave their head.
Okay. Those I've seen. I've seen things
that
like
fella that. Has made a lot of money.
Yeah, I would think so, since a lot of people
lot of bald
shave
people.
Their heads. But, you know, I think the big takeaway from today that people really have to understand is that first they have to start out doing a thorough patent search. That's the foundation that I talk to people all the time about. And then, of course, if they can get by that and they know that they're free and clear, they have to do some viability studies. They have to make sure that there is a desire for the product to be made. And then, of course, they have to understand the cost before they even start the patent search, what they're in for. So they understand that, hey, am I going to spend $5,000? Am I going to spend $50,000 or more? And on the next show run, because I didn't think this would take this long, the process we could talk about forever, as you know. But next time I want to get into manufacturing, the design. Okay, you got your patent or you're free and clear, and now you've done your studies and it looks good. What do you do next?
Right. I think that's be a good one.
All right. Till next time. This is Lee for Jim and Ron, and you're listening to Launch.